It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Jules Gearhart, what is the best Tekken game?
Oh, mate, why would you start by asking me a question on this podcast, which is called the UBP, the UBP, the UBP.
The UBP it is.
Which is where we obviously look at gaming questions such as this and have to dissect them using our little pea brains. And you've just hit me with a right blinder straight away. Now, the purist in me wants to say that the answer is Tekken 3.
Yes, that's what
however, however, as we found out when we were playing it on the PS1 the other day, sorry, the PS1 Mini.
PS1 which, Mini thing, yeah.
You don't unlock Brian Fury straight away. You have to go through the arcade mode 7 or 8 times. And that, to me, is a crime.
Yeah, all of our collective... I agree. All of our childhood memories thought he was either on the roster by default or unlocked with a cheat. And then we realised that just wasn't the case.
Like, and I'm not going to lie. Yeah. The roster for Tekken 3, there's a lot to be left to be wanting. It's left wanting, mate. Because what do you actually unlock from it? You unlock... you unlock Kuma. You unlock Jack. You unlock... Anna,
hey, it's Gunjack.
Boo.
Gunjack's
you're like Julia. Jack. Boo. And it's like, and then finally you get Brian, who's amazing. But apart from that, there's not really many like banterous characters in there. Where's my Steve Foxes? He is my absolute G. I love him to pieces, mate.
Oh, I couldn't see when they brought Steve Fox in 4. I couldn't get away with how like his two kick buttons were like the sway buttons.
Yeah, but that's great. Like, that's an amazing little gimmick.
Yeah. I guess when you get him down, I mean, I've been absolutely ruined by many Steve Foxes, especially online. Like, I get that if you're a good Steve Fox player.
The best part is when you get like the swaying back and forth, eventually you can get him into that thing where he's constantly doing it like that, and then you do these punches that are so crazy that you're like, oh yes, mate.
So yeah, we're not sponsored by Tekken whatsoever. The reason I put this out on the tweet is because Katsuhiro Harada retweeted me taking the picture of you playing Tekken 3, and I was like, that's my childhood dream come true. I just sort you know, imagine that even happening. So I was like, let's just do a Tekken question and to talk a little bit about Tekken.
It's literally Kazuya just looking at you, just like, and then doing the little smirk at the end, just kind of like, all right, mate.
Just there, yeah, he's got you. Yeah. He knows what
before he throws you into a volcano.
But I come back, I had to come back.
That's true.
It's always the way of things.
What's yours?
But yeah, so we asked, oh, go on.
What's your favorite then? I'll go with 4 because obviously Steve Fox, that's when it came in. That's what I like. The thing is that I know that it's not the best Tekken game.
4 is controversial.
It's the one that I had the most fun with because of the fact that me and my mate Liam, we used to play that endlessly. He got way too good with the Jin's new moveset that he'd obviously come into 4 with, and I hated it. But it also gave us Marduk. Marduk was a good laugh as well.
Marduk's really fun. I like Tekken 4 for what it tried to do. I wasn't a fan of them getting rid of all the grapples because it was all like stance switching. Position switching stuff, but I love Tekken 4's Jin. I love all that karate stuff, and I love his moveset. For me, it's Tekken 3 is the most nostalgic and the one that I can go back to the easiest. I think 5 is the one I played the most. So I played a hell of a lot of 3, but it would be 5 Dark Resurrection when they sort of re-released it. Or the home arcade, the home version was called Dark Resurrection. So I had that, and I had that on the PSP as well. All around it would be 3, but
We have to also give a massive shout out to Tekken 7. Like, it is a phenomenally crafted. I'd say that in terms of mechanics, 7's probably the best.
Like, well, I love the thing, because funnily enough, I re-downloaded 7 last night because I never bought all the season pass stuff. But again, we're not sponsored by them, but I've just bought this last night. There's a deal, there's a deal on the PlayStation Store that gives you all the DLC and everything for like £18. announced, and I was like, well, I'm just going to do that and get all the characters that I missed and everything else. So I just had a big old Tekken sesh last night. And yeah, Tekken 7, it's always been super solid. I've had it since launch and everything. But I love the thing that they do where, like, if two of you go in for, like, what would kill either of you, it zooms
right in. Yeah, and then it's who actually gets the frame-perfect punch first. That's a brilliant addition.
That's really cool. And I love the Street Fighter-style, like, finisher stuff they put in. Like, every character has, like, the rage art stuff, which is really cool. But anyway, yeah, so we
have everybody... I'm going to change my answer, actually. I've gone from Tekken 4. I'm going to change it to Tekken Tag Tournament, because that you can't have a bad time with it. There's so many characters. It's literally everyone at that point in the roster, plus a few new ones as well, with Unown in there as well. Big fan of that. Not the best fighting game, but the most fun overall.
Tekken Tag was the game, or maybe the first game I got on my PS2. Phantom Vision and Ridge Racer. And Tekken Tag's music, I think, is the best music. I love Tekken 3 and everything else, but Tekken Tag's score, that is just the year 2000 incarnate.
We've set the record straight then. Scott's in with Tekken 3, I'm in with Tekken Tag. Thank you very much, Scott, for your question on the Untitled Banter podcast.
The UBP. I don't even think I said my name, but I'm Scott Tilford. You said Jules Gill before.
I did.
But yes, I wanted to ask people what they thought. A lot of people saying Tekken 3, Tekken 5. Not much love for Tekken the original. I don't think that game hardly ever gets brought up. I'm not a huge original Tekken fan.
Yeah.
I don't like the way the jumping feels really weird.
The moon physics.
Yes, and you stay down for way too long as well. Not even that much love for Tekken 2 in a lot of the responses that we got. Alpha Oliver says the best one is obviously where you play volleyball as a dino. We had a response from Nosebleed Interactive, the developers of Arcade Paradise, which, again, not sponsored,
amazing,
but a great game. They said, easy question, the best Tekken is Soul Calibur on the Dreamcast, which is big lols. Big lols energy.
Cheeky whippets there.
Cheeky whippets. I mean, the thing is, I remember Soul Calibur back when it was called Soul Edge, or when it was Soul Blade.
Oh, Soul Blade, mate. Soul Blade.
That's and you how had long we've been going.
What was the giant barbarian creature guy who had Rock, I think his name was? He was my main. Either him
Killick,
or Siegfried.
I think. Was it Killick that you had the tonfas, or whatever you call the nunchucks or something?
Yeah, I want to say yeah. Cool. I mean, it was like at that time when it came out, they were such a varied group of characters. Voldo was like nothing I'd ever seen before. Cervantes was amazing.
Well.
An undead pirate? How cool is that? It's like
with
a
giant sword. And then to round off that portion of questions and stuff, we had Zach saying, 3 is the most iconic, 6 has the best roster, and I don't care what anyone says, 4 was great fun.
There we go. Thank you, mate. Thank you for the support.
There you go. Hurrying on into overall questions, because yes, the Untitled Banner podcast goes through as many of your submissions as possible. And we have a follower from Alpha Oliver who says, do you think Ubisoft can pull off a back to basics Assassin's Creed next year, or will they butcher it with microtransactions and a cacophonous UI? And we also had Jacob Sawyer saying, do we think Ubisoft will ever return to staying as historical as possible in Assassin's Creed? The latest leaks point to Witch Trials, and that has a lot of potential if they actually use actual Templars to oppress the populace. However, I feel like they will add actual witches. Is the Assassin's Creed that we love dead? Yeah. I don't know if you've seen all the Assassin's Creed leaks, but that's all
so
the stuff for tomorrow.
The thing is that like Assassin's Creed loves to play fast and loose with history, because as much as they've been like, oh yeah, we try to keep as close to it as possible when it comes to either recreating areas or historic moments or monuments and stuff like that, they definitely dive off the deep end when it comes to pretty much anything to do with the story. It's like, this thing happened. It did not happen in the way that they are telling you. Like,
I've been playing through Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which I really, really like, but I got to a point a couple days ago where that game's story just falls the F apart, and there's not that much to it anyway, but you're just trying to find out the history of your family, trying to find your mum, who's sort of been lost the whole time, and you find your dad. Do you want to guess who your dad is in that game?
Poseidon, King of the Sea.
Pythagoras. You're not that far.
No, really? Actually?
Yeah. You go underground and you just find Atlantis, and there's a guy just standing outside like a water door, and he's like, hey, by the way, I'm
sorry,
Pythagoras.
Sorry, mate. You literally just said probably the more interesting thing there. Not that you found your dad, nor the fact that he was Pythagoras, but also the fact that you found Atlantis.
You just cheekily find Atlantis. You sort of go under some rocks and you just find Atlantis, and then they did Atlantis DLC, which I don't know if I'm going to play anymore. But,
I'm actually just going to point this out. This is one of my pet peeves when it comes to video games. It's like, oh, you'll have never, like, it's this mystery land that no one's ever stepped foot in before. Oh, it's just down over there, which people could have easily found had they stumbled through it. It's like, whenever they talk about, no one's ever, like, disturbed this civilization for 10,000 years. Mm-hmm. It's like, I accessed
how?
It by picking up two random twigs outside the entrance. The puzzle to get inside was not hard. It's like Skyrim when you go through those, like, barrow, the dens, and it's like all the matching puzzle thing. Mm-hmm. Do you really think that no one sat there for more than 3 minutes bits and just figured it out.
Honestly, in Odyssey, the way you open the door down to Atlantis is you just line up some mirrors, so you just get like a bit of light.
What, and the Indiana Jones trick?
Literally, and then it goes to the future of the timeline where you're now playing as Leila Hassan, and you go back to Atlantis in the future, and no one has found any, I assume no one has found anything, because he talks as if like no one's ever been there. Yeah, for as much as I was enjoying that game, I do think it's enjoyable fast food fodder. Yeah. The story falls apart.
You just have to let like logic take a massive jump. Don't you just go, yeah, it's fine, whatever, okay, I accept that I found Atlantis. Anyway, your dad's Pythagoras, yay!
Well, exactly, and like you were saying about things you hate in game design, I hate when a game just like level locks you from the end of the story and says like, hey, go find these four items.
Yes.
They're somewhere in the world, and I'm just like, no, I'm never going to do that, which is what Odyssey does at the end. But anyway,
I was just going to say, that was the one thing that ruined the Wind Waker for me, was that moment I felt that the story was really like clicking at a fast pace, that it was like I was so invested into the gameplay and the action, and then all of a sudden it's just like, oh yeah, you got to collect all these pieces to get into the final bit, and it's like, oh, and they just happen to be in the furthest apart from each other, and it's like, oh, this is such a boring fetch quest at this stage in the game.
Yeah, that was the thing that put me off, or made me hate Skyward Sword. And it's not that you're collecting like seven fragments.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
There's so much backtracking in that game, and I was just like, oh my god, just end, like just find your actual closure point. But anyway, yeah, in regards to Assassin's Creed, there are three games at least about to be announced. There's Assassin's Creed Mirage, which is the next mainline game, where you play as Basim from Assassin's Creed Valhalla, but it's all set during sort of template, like old school times. I forget.
Yeah,
when the
we spoke
set.
About it on the main podcast, where it's basically just the cut content from Valhalla that they're dressing up and like then trying to sell you an image of like, we're returning to our roots, guys. Like, no, you're not. You've just literally made this about 10 years ago.
Let's say that one doesn't hook you in. What about the idea of two additional story games being plugged into Assassin's Creed Infinity, whatever the hell that is? We're apparently getting Assassin's Creed Japan called Assassin's Creed Red.
Finally.
And we're getting an Assassin's Creed game set in the Holy Roman Empire. That's the witches, hunting down the witches one, which I could go for like a witch assassin. Like if she's being hunted and everyone thinks that she's something else, but you're actually taking out all the different like authority figures that are trying to chase you down. I like the idea of a witch assassin. I just don't need an actual witch. I don't need actual magic in a monster.
No, if they go to that extreme lengths where you're basically fighting the Roman gods, or they have some sort of superpowered or supernatural element, and they say, oh yeah, you're actually a witch, then I probably will just be like, I don't know, like Assassin's Creed games, like I said before, they play fast and loose with reality, but there are certain things that I like them to keep, if you know what I mean. Like I liked, for example, Assassin's Creed 1 and 2 when it was more sort of grounded. Now we've got to the point where it's just it's like very over the top and accentuated now. Like,
well, the thing, I'm curious what Assassin's Creed Infinity is. They were meant to be unveiling what that is, or they tweeted about it because it leaked, and they said, oh look, we'll have more information for you later, and that's assumedly going to be at the live stream on the 10th, which is tomorrow. So I'm curious what that is, because that's like some weird live service platform version of Assassin's Creed,
which again makes me worried, because if they're just turning Infinity into a hub, like a big like interactive launcher for these other small episodic story things now, if they're well curated and it's like the Hitman game with its approach to episodic stuff, then fine. But if it's entire games that are plugged into this, we are going to get so bloated and weighed down with like, hey, have you logged on to Assassin's Creed Red recently to go collect 50 feathers? Well, you won't get your EXP bonus that applies to Mirage to unlock a cat. It's like, oh please, don't make me play more than one Assassin's Creed game at a time.
That's the thing, because they're already out there, or at least what's leaked as three games at once. I don't know how you balance that. I think like what Alpha Oliver said, I think they'll go all out with microtransactions. It'll be a horrible UI. It'll be one of those UIs where you move the cursor with the analog stick to hover over stuff, like that fake mouse UI that everything has. But yeah, I think they're trying to tick both boxes. I have to hope that Mirage is their back to basics one. But yeah, I don't know where Ubisoft's head is at. They've lost so many key staff members alongside various people who needed to go because of all the allegations and everything. So who knows what the hell Assassin's Creed is now.
Such a strange thing as well to release three games. Like, I know that Assassin's Creed hype is still fairly impressive compared to most other AAA franchises, but to go there and say like there is this amount of content coming, it's enough to make even diehard fans just go like, does that mean that one project's going to suffer from lack of development time, or are they all going to be releasing around the same time? Like, you're paying 70 quid a pop likely for each of these, Are you really looking forward to paying like that amount of money for that amount of Assassin's Creed?
I think that because the way that they're announcing everything feels like when the MCU just says, like, here's your next 3 years of stuff.
Yeah.
And like, the leaks for this are the AC Red and AC, it's called like Hex or Neo. They're all code words, but the Japanese one and the Holy Roman one, they're penciled in for 2024 and 2025.
Okay.
And it's like, there's something about knowing that many years are already penned out that I think is like inertia. I think people don't get excited about that much stuff
because
you want to be surprised.
Yes.
And it's just, you're just sort of sat waiting. It's like when Todd Howard was like, well, we're going to be doing Fallout 5 after Elder Scrolls 6. And then we'll be doing, you know, that's just the next few years of the company just laid out. And it's like, sure, I guess. But yeah, I guess we'll wait and see. This stream's tomorrow across Saturday afternoon. So it can't get any worse. So we'll see. Next question from McAllister NYC, who says, with Jim Ryan crying foul over Call of Duty, is he being a hypocrite or does he have a legitimate gripe? And is he looking to sabotage the deal overall? Any thoughts would be cool. And the best Tekken is the one you play with friends.
Oh, that's very
true. Weekend, fellas. That's very true. The Jim Ryan stuff, have you kept up with this? That he's
No.
So the overall thing, Jim Ryan, you know, I forget what his exact title is now, but sort of man who's calling the shots with Sony PlayStation, got out there during an interview and said that the proposed deal that's going to be going through in regards to Activision and Call of Duty being bought up by Microsoft is inadequate on several levels. I think that was the quote.
I have seen this, yeah. Actually.
Yeah, so he's basically hanging it on the idea that 3 years of exclusivity is nowhere near enough, and he said that the brand is so valuable, and it means so much to PlayStation fans that there's no way that they would be happy with that, which, you know, ties in with the whole thing of the legal side of it, to say that if Microsoft had too much of a monopoly on the industry, that the deal couldn't go through. And so there's that whole way of playing this, where if he kicks up enough of a stink and says that this will sabotage the PlayStation brand, then maybe bigger legal parties step in to stop the deal.
I always find it very interesting when people throw around the term monopoly when it comes to a singular game, like in this case, or a singular franchise, because it's like Sony also operates under the idea of exclusivity with their first party titles. are they then opening themselves up for Microsoft to say, you're cornering too much of your own market, you need to give us access to that? Like, it doesn't, I understand that it was across a lot of platforms and is then being like filtered into one, but it's not the only first person shooter out there. It's not the only franchise that bases itself on warfare. So how are they going to try and stitch together an argument to say this specific thing should be open to the people? Like,
that's the defense on Microsoft's side. That was what they said a few weeks ago, where it wasn't Phil Spencer, but, well, maybe it was Phil Spencer. Microsoft's side was literally saying there's nothing special about the Call of Duty brand. That was the quote.
Which
was hilarious.
Yeah, because it's obviously, it sounds like you're like downplaying the brand you're about to buy, but it does actually put into clear and stark terms that you know, it is nothing special. Somebody else could have made Call of Duty or another person. Like, you're effectively writing off Battlefield, what is left of the modern Medal of Honor series, if that ever comes back. You know what I mean? There are other people that could come in and take that away. But what it makes me laugh the most is that somebody going into this argument saying that it's inadequate, while at the same time charging us more for PlayStation 5 consoles, when somebody, I just saw a video like about not even 30 minutes ago, where somebody broke down the new PS5 model and the old one, and has told us it's cheaper to make, there's cheaper parts in there. They are saving money and charging you more, and that is hilarious, because how should we be saying that that is inadequate too?
The Jim Ryan era has been very money focused. Like, when they're buying mobile game studios, they're getting out there trying to make as many different deals as possible. Stuff like this, like you said, Sony are very much known for their exclusives. It's kind of hilarious bringing that word in and being like, well, you guys can't have exclusives. That's not how this works.
Yeah.
But also, one of the defenses that, one of the attacks, rather, that Jim Ryan busted out was that Call of Duty is so far ahead of the competition in its genre or overall that there'll never be another Call of Duty, which I get what he's getting at. But for me, I just think of something like Apex Legends. Like, overnight, that became the Fortnite contender. And it had its day in the sun. It's still going very strong. Fortnite's won out over time, but there's always opportunity for something. I get Microsoft's side as well. One of the things that was interesting was those initial conversations on, you know, Microsoft buy Activision Blizzard and lock down Call of Duty as an Xbox exclusive, and then Xbox and Phil Spencer were saying, like, oh no, we have no intention of doing that. But the latest deal, the latest conversations and everything is that it would be a 3-year window. So as much as they're saying you guys would still have Call of Duty on PlayStation,
it'd be 3 years behind the trend.
Something would happen at that 3-year mark. I still think they'll force Game Pass app on PlayStation. I think that'll be how you play Call of Duty, because it'll just be, well, we're telling you can still access it, but you've got to get it through Game Pass and pay a subscription and do it that way. But yeah, it's a hell of a precedent to be set, but it's like, it's still very much ongoing. But I get Jim Ryan's strategy. Next question from Corel Type Shaw, who says, do we agree that game prices have become increasingly expensive? What do we think is a fair price point for games? Also, Eddie Gordo ruins friendships. He's from Indonesia.
I tell you what, if you find a seasoned Tekken player who plays Eddie, my God, you are getting juggled, because his moveset are so hard to read at the best of times. They have nerfed him quite heavily in Tekken 7, from what I hear. In Tekken 3, he can be an absolute powerhouse if you just cannot read instantly what he's about to do.
Was, the other day when we were playing, I was using him against Joe, and I'm never button bashing.
He immediately said it though. When you put a first combo in, and I watched your controller, you weren't just like slamming the
buttons.
You literally were just like da 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 da, and he was just like, oh, it's spamming, are you? And it's like button mashing. It's like no.
Like I was like, I take personal offense to this, Joseph, because I've played a lot of. That's the thing. As much as I get the Tekken, that Eddie is a completely abusable character, I've never been the button bashing guy. I've never been a button basher in gaming anyway. I think there's a way to play him, but I get that a lot of people have house rules to just be like, no Eddie, we're not even anywhere near
the
guy.
It's the same as like no odd job in Goldeneye. Yes. I mean, admittedly, that was declared by the devs themselves to be cheating, but no one has come out on the Tekken front and said that it is cheating to use Eddie.
We need to remember this post recording that we should do like house rules in games, because you're so right. Yeah. People have like certain things that you just don't do in games.
Like on Smash Bros, where you do Final Destination, no items. That's where, if you want to settle a real score on Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, knives only, knives and pistols only on Rust. That is the one.
Yes, and no, is it dual akimbo shotguns?
Yeah, no dual akimbo shotguns.
Never have any of that. Yeah, yeah, there's
no noob tubes, the grenade launchers.
In terms of game prices becoming expensive, what's your reaction to that? Because I have a lot of thoughts on that.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I have said many times over by this point now that I do not believe that the consumer should foot the bill for the exorbitant cost of producing video games if it is within the publisher's, if the publisher has chosen to go down the route of spending excessive amounts of money on tech and ideas that
like
are
the last
not.
Of Us,
yeah, exactly. That I don't feel like we should be paying a £70 price tag for a game that has obviously come out in 2013 or whatever. I feel that a fair price point it was already established. I already felt like £40 to £50 was enough because that was always established from when we were kids. It was about that. And I know that obviously like prices have gone up and inflation has meant that that is worth less. But the amount of volume of units that they would sell at a cheaper price point is enough to make everyone's pockets lined with cash. Them adding in that extra £20 to £30, it's just greedy. Like,
it feels like it.
You put a PlayStation 4 copy of a game in front of me and then you make me play a PlayStation 5 copy of the same game and then you're telling me that the second one costs £20 to £30 more and there is next to zero graphical difference because it's been engineered for the prior generation. And I just go, why the hell should I pay that?
I think in the case of The Last of Us remake, there's definitely like a graphical uptick if you compare them side by side. It's just funny because when we first saw the trailers, our minds had already up-resed it anyway. So it was like, well, that looks exactly the same. But if you do side by side them, you can tell the difference. However, I don't think it's worth £70. When even Josh, who loves The Last of Us remake and reviewed it and everything, still doesn't say it's worth the £70 if you're coming in having played one of the previous ones. But yeah, the £70 thing is interesting because loads of third parties tried that across the last few years. And then Sony went, well, we're going to put our exclusives up to £70. And it's like, well, is, you know, it's not like the quality isn't there. Horizon Forbidden West is like immaculate and everything. But at some point, like for me, it always reflects on the development cost, the production cost. Does it feel like a premium product? Is it breaking day one? Which a lot of those third-party games, you know, they barely run.
There is something to be said about the mind games that such a high price point plays on the consumer as well. And this is what worries me about the future of gaming as a whole, that price might be used as not just a gatekeeping method for some people who can't afford it to generate sort of FOMO to make people like want to trade in games or sell stuff in order to achieve that level of like are part of the group, but it also is prohibitive for you buying another game. So say that the Call of Duty example we were talking about before, say that the price of games gets to an astronomical £100. That's a lot of money no matter how you look at it. If somebody comes along and says, I've just spent £100 on that Call of Duty game, I don't have £100 left to go and buy another game. So they're basically using it to price competitors out. So it's like they're using FOMO, constant live service stuff. As long as they get you embroiled into the mindset that you belong to this brand and that you should support this brand like you do a football team or a sports team, then you'll go there, you'll pay your £100, won't have any cash left, so you can't buy a competitor's game, and it therefore corners the market for price.
Yeah, that's absolutely one part of the strategy, or at least on for the fan theory side of it, it makes sense. I mean, like, there are tons of people who only play like one FIFA a year or one Call of Duty a year, but those ecosystems last them the whole year, whether it's DLC or microtransactions or whatever. I can absolutely see that. I think for me, on the Sony side, it feels as opportunistic as them raising the console price, where it just is the Jim Ryan era. It's just sort of, okay, how do we maximize profits? And, you know, adding $10 more or £10 more to their standard price, that it immediately is a massive difference. Over time, and I see a Sony that reminds me of the PS3 Sony, the hubristic, let's see what we can get away with Sony. And it feels like you said with the console, it's cheaper to manufacture now, but it costs more, and that feels like, well, we're going to capitalize on the Christmas rush, so we might as well do that. I wouldn't be surprised if it lowers again next year. And so I think that, I mean, the market dictates. It's like, you know, there was that massive spending increase across the pandemic, which has now gone back down, but I think right now we're still sort of analyzing that in relation to even years beforehand. Like, the industry hasn't even really kicked in yet.
But the problem is that you can't go back from this. Like, I don't think it's as easy as dialing back down the price, because it's never happened in the history of video games. They've literally always stayed at the AAA worth like £40, with like on the PlayStation 1 when we were kids. Then you got like the classics range, which was set at £20 or whatever like that. It's like, I've never known, I would never expect them to go £70. Oh, people are buying less, let's reduce the price. Hell no. They've already seen that people will still buy that.
Well, what's interesting is like monetizing the day one buyer. Like, we've long said that the worst time to play a game is day one. I'm as guilty of this as anyone else. I'm literally going to go and pick up Splatoon 3 after we talk. But you always get the most broken version of the game. You get the one with the least content. You get the one with the most patches necessary, etc. But it feels like they're monetizing that group of people, because if you wait, you'll get that game on PlayStation Plus. You'll get that game on Game Pass. Doesn't work for Nintendo necessarily, but the, you know, Game Pass is still the best deal in gaming, and the Sony PlayStation Plus Extra tier is a phenomenal deal if you haven't played those games. Anyway, and they are all games, something like Ghost of Tsushima, that is sold for a really high price point that you can now just get on a monthly service if you wait. Mm-hmm. So I think that games have become increasingly expensive for day one. You're actually way more encouraged to just bide your time, not give in to the hype and wait it out, and just pay, what, £9-10 a month or something and get it later on.
And I mean, if you've even pre-ordered, you spent even more than that, because likely the pre-orders are much more than the base game price anyway. So you've bought yourself some tat, you've got yourself a game that doesn't work right yet, and you've become effectively a guinea pig in terms of the testing period.
How much can we monetize that initial day?
I'm not going to ever call anyone stupid for parting with their money before they've got a game, but I'm just saying, just please be careful with your money. Look at what it is like. And with the amount of reviews that have to be changed after launch because of additional content being put in, or like, as we've covered many times, microtransactions being added in as well, it's the relationship between consumer, publisher and reviewer has become so tangled now that, again, that's Scott and I have always been calling for transparency in this industry, but it's getting harder and harder to tell you what games are worth your money.
That's always the thing. And that question of like, oh, is this worth £70? Well, £70 is worth different amounts to different people.
Yeah, what does worth mean?
That thing's always hard. But the ground rule, like you said, is just be careful with your money. It's like, can you afford to buy this day one? Are you going to be comfortable? You're going to miss that money. Factor all that stuff in. I can afford to go grab Splatoon 3 like an idiot and see what that thing plays. I mean, Cult of the Lamb, I love that game. It's one of my games of the year, but that game is absolutely broken.
You
in
said
its final
towards the
quarter.
End.
Still waiting for a patch. It's kind of ridiculous. If it was any game from a more reputable studio or whatever, it would be getting dragged daily.
But this is what I don't understand, because it's Devolver, isn't it? They did this.
Well, Devolver are publishing it. It's Monster Magnet. Or something. Actually, that's a band. It's not Monster Magnet. It's Monster something. For the devs. And the game's absolutely gorgeous, but the final dungeon just hard crashes, and I've got a bug where none of my dudes move anymore, so I can't do anything in it. But that's because I got the game too early, quote unquote. But at the same time, you're trying to go off their release dates. It's just, there's all that stuff. Next question from Max Barkman, who says, been a big fan of the show for some time, finally setting up a Twitter account to send you some questions.
Oh, well, bless you. Thank you
very much. What could the gaming industry learn from the film industry and vice versa?
That's a good question, actually, because the more that they go on, the more they kind of echo each other, really. Mm-hmm. You've got your...
Death Stranding hiring every known actor under the sun.
Yeah, I mean, they increasing a use of celebrities and well-known figures within the gaming community in order to shift games based on their reputation is like Keanu Reeves and Cyberpunk, for example, is a very good example of that recently. You get to see giant crossover events, obviously you've got back in the day when you had Street Fighters, Tekken's crossed over and did that. That was a huge monumentous thing, and all the Smash Bros stuff, using franchises to sell that. You've got your almost ensemble pieces where you have to buy into this live service title that gets plugged in extra bits in order to further on the overall narrative of the game you're playing. They do echo from each other quite a lot. There's a thing that they should both drop, though, and that is stopping ruining surprises in their trailers, because my God, the amount of times that I feel like I've either played a game fully or watched a film fully just from a well-edited but poorly thought-out trailer.
Yeah, giving the trailer cut to a different department who haven't actually worked on the film and just go, we can just use this scene. And it's like, that's a big reveal, actually, guys. The fact that those two characters are standing together. For me, these are very specific things. I think the gaming industry could learn transparency from the movie industry. Mm-hmm. Every movie has a making of documentary, a behind the scenes, interviews with the entire cast, breaking down the process. I feel like a lot of the reasons that people think, even if it's 2 months before launch, people are like, I hope this feature is going to be in. Oh, I can't wait to see it. I hope they put this in. Nothing's getting done 2 months before launch to that degree. And I feel like there could be so much more done with the transparency of how a game is made. In many podcasts we've shouted out various making of docs, like Indie Game the Movie, or on a bigger scale, Double Fine Adventure, things that Nick Noclip, the channel itself, from Danny O'Dwyer. They're not Danny Dyer. That's the
definitely
actor.
Not Danny Dyer.
He's not Danny Dyer's thing.
Danny Dyer is afraid of UFOs and gangs at the same time.
Not that channel. Danny O'Dwyer's Noclip, though. They're really good at showing the transparency of how things are made, which I think gaming could learn from so much. Gaming is so secretive with all these NDAs and leaks and everything. And it would only help the populace and the mainstream following if they knew exactly what to expect. And we wouldn't be as let down with target renders and vertical slices and stuff. And another one's really specific, but I just thought of if you're thinking about something that the movie industry can learn from gaming, it would be accurate physics modeling, which I know is a weird thing, but so much CG in movies looks so rubbery and not believable, and it's because they haven't rendered the physics, because it's hand animated or whatever. And I'm like, you know, in Black Panther, the final fight looks horrendous.
Oh, it's really bad, isn't it?
Anything where any body is like hitting against a wall or something just looks terrible. I'm like, if that was in a game, it would be believable because you'd actually have physics and weight and momentum to it. So I know that's a very granular thing, but I wish movies would learn how to render CG better.
I would also echo that I would love it if video games took inspiration from the way that films process their audio, because I know that, don't get me wrong, video game audio is fantastic and like for the most part you can have some outstanding soundtracks, but I think that just like when you're in the cinema, the way that they use like binaural audio and like make sure that it like fits the space of a theater to best please the audience, I feel like maybe that's not as thought out or as well funded as it could be in some video games. It's just like, here is a flat tone of noise coming at you from a video game in most cases.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is like PS5 tries to do 3D audio. It obviously varies by game. Things like Returnal, Horizon, the new Last of Us remake, they work really well because obviously they're made with it in mind. But you can, if you go into the settings on the PS5, set like levels of sound, which is kind of cool.
Oh, I didn't know that actually.
Yeah, only on PS5. It's not like an industry thing, but it is cool. And like, yeah, you can set like, where do you want this sound to land so it hits your ear and then what's below you, quote unquote. But that only works if you have headphones on. Like the whole idea of Sony saying, you know, like it can transform any TV into a 3D sound thing. No, it doesn't.
You've got to have no, it cannot.
To make that work. But yeah, all those things, I think there could be a lot more beneficial stuff done if they worked with took influence from each other a lot more often. A question from Darren Barkley, who says, "Hey guys, am I broken? I'm actually enjoying Octopath Traveler on mobile. Haven't done much story yet, just enjoying life doing the side quests and enjoying the world, but I'm loving the aesthetic of it all and think the soundtrack is great. Do I need help?" Now, I included this, this question here because I think you will have seen Octopath Traveler's graphic style, the whole 2D HD thing.
Yeah.
Where do you come down on that? Because that's increasingly a divisive thing. I want to talk about that for a little bit because I love that look. I would take Final Fantasy VI like that. I would love it.
Well, I don't see what the issue is necessarily with it.
Well, I didn't either until, like, I mean, what's the new game that's coming out that has that? I think Deerfield Chronicles looks like that. There's a new RPG that's coming out that has that style, and Square Enix, a lot of their new stuff has that style.
Okay.
And Triangle Strategy had it earlier this year as well. And
is it just because it looks like RPG Maker style thing, of just like a little bit low effort? Is that what
I
people
don't know.
Have?
People don't see, well, that's the thing. There's a wing of like RPG fans who hate the fact that it's like 2D sprites on a 3D background, whereas for me, it looks perfect. I like it as a mid-step between like 1996 or whatever and where we are now, but there's a wing of like general RPG fans that just hate that look and I guess would prefer pixel art overall or something.
I've got no personal beef with that at all. Like I'm not gonna draw a line in the sand and say this shall never be crossed, but yeah, it looks fine to me. Like what's the actual gameplay like on mobile, they were saying, didn't they?
Well, they haven't done much story yet, but enjoying the side quest and everything. I guess that game, they do say controls work well for mobile, so I guess there's not that much you have to input on Octopath. It's just, I mean, it's turn-based combat. You're sort of investing various... you can do a thing where per your turn, you can bank a hit and then hit harder further down the line, a bit like Bravely Default. And I love Octopath. I just thought that eventually the story sort of dropped off because I wanted more team-based stuff. Like, you have such a great cast of characters, really, really cool stories, and they barely overlap. Like, you've got a troop who's meant to be traveling together, but you never see them together apart from a couple of little cutaway scenes. It's like... it's a weird thing.
I'm just having a quick look at the differences between this version and the mobile one. It does seem they've really tried to put the grind in quite heavy from this. So maybe the reason that this game is like burning like a skip fire is because of the changes they've made to make it more mobile friendly but gamer unfriendly, it seems.
I think it's just a general response to that graphics thing that some people just go, no, I'm not playing that. But it's kind of cool.
People saying that they're gacha games, this one is. We can say that the graphics aren't offensive, potentially, but maybe the gameplay is absolutely ripe.
I've not seen, I didn't even, until...
Octopath Traveler... Champions of the Continent, that's what this one is called.
Okay, cool. That must be a different thing to Octopath Traveler then.
Yes, that's
a port. Well, silly me, I've played so much Octopath Traveler on Switch, I thought it was just that brought across to the mobile. But no, I would assume that you don't need help as long as you're happy. As long as you're having a lovely old time, you're fine. Final question from Honest NPC. Thanks again for the amazing podcast. Well, thank you very much for listening.
Bless you.
Hope you're both well. Question: how do you feel about games being updated and changed? Whilst it's good for broken games, it also means after a long break, they're hard to go back to, which happened with Overwatch. Now, I have long thought, we talked about the things that the game industry could learn from movies. I would love a previously on catch-up thing, like for every single game. Like, just give me like a 5-minute little window of like, remember when you were doing this? You were in the middle of this mission and this guy just said this. I like find that's like, it's true, like so hard to go back to certain things. Mostly giant RPGs, but I remember trying to go back to Warframe and that game had changed so much that I was like, I don't even know where I left off or whatever.
There are some games as well that like change their complete UI. They change the like course of what's been plugged into it. So by the time you come back to it, like for example, I was talking to you about should I load up For Honor again? And when I went back to it again, I was just like, my God, this game is like totally different to how I remember it. Like in many cases, it's better, I would say, in terms of like mechanics and the how they've addressed a lot of the issues that plagued it upon launch. But there are a few things that I'm just like, I feel completely alienated by. I'm just lost in like the sea of menus and other things going on. I'm like, what is this?
Well, that game has that mouse cursor UI thing.
Yes, it does.
Just the worst console UI ever. But For Honor is kind of like, it's like Dark Souls PvP, the game. Like, I liked what it was at the time. It was just so much grinding and stuff. But I wonder if Ubisoft, because they put a bunch of DLC out for it. I saw it was like Shovel Knight DLC. And I was like, am I going to have to download For Honor to see what this is? But yeah, in terms of games being tweaked and stuff, I guess I would take it over back in the day when a game would have to just be recalled. But at the same time, it did put the impetus on developers and on studios to make sure stuff couldn't be broken. Like, you just, I can't think of hardly any high profile broken games from like the 90s. Like, there was hardly anything that was had a budget and then came in, you know, disastrous or whatever. It kind of just didn't happen because it couldn't.
But nowadays it's a case of you can just sort of like you say patch in or patch out certain things whenever you want, and maybe that does make people a little bit complacent when it comes to developing their games, because they can just go, right, well, we can fix this, just get it out the door and we'll fix it with a huge patch day one, which is never great, really.
No, and I think that's what's like annoying with something like Cult of the Lamb. I don't know if you've had this with a certain game where you're just like, let me love you. Like, I want to spend my time on this. I'm thinking about this game all day long and I just want to play it and I can't because it's broken. It's like, well, I'm kind of just in this weird early access period, like waiting for it to sort of hit what it should have been when I've actually put the money on it. So I think it's a good step for the industry, like obviously, but it's kind of on the likes of us to keep the pressure on when something comes out that is broken, because you know, the wrong side of it, and you just everything just comes out broken like it was in 2017. Yeah, like some of the worst of it.
Yeah.
But yes, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions. We actually got through more than two this week.
I know. I was very proud of us.
We're flying. So yes, massive thank you. This has been the UBP. The UBP.
UBP.
The UBP. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thanks for having me. And remember, you can check back every Thursday where we'll be putting out our tweets over on Twitter to ask you for your questions about the gaming industry, food industry, and of course everything else in between. You can find me over on Twitter at RetroJ, but the O is a zero, and you can find Scott over at
/LP89.
And that is how I'm going to end my sentence.
Hey, beautiful time. We'll catch you guys all next week.
Bye everyone. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? we wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.